This episode of Football 301, a very special episode. Dane Brugler from The Athletic joins me to talk about the college football playoff and the prospects involved there for the 2026 NFL draft class. Very fun conversation. We talk about all the teams, 1 through 12, prospects to watch for this year's class, maybe some ones to watch in future classes, quarterback discussion, strengths of this draft class, plenty of receivers, plenty of linebackers, actually, too. Dane's awesome. This was an awesome show. See you guys in a sec. Hello and welcome back to Football 301. I'm your host, Nate Tice. We are recording on Monday. I have a fun guest because we have the college football playoff this weekend and we're starting to get into draft season. You know, some of the fan bases have been in draft season for a few weeks now, but I'm going to be joined my guy, The Athletic's draft expert, to talk about this weekend's college football playoff opening weekend games and all the prospects involved. Maybe get some big board talk. What the hell's going on with this QB class? The Athletic's own Dane Brugler joining me. How are you doing today, Dane? Great seeing you. Thank you for joining me.
It is always my pleasure. I miss talking to you on a podcast. And so this is a lot of fun. Yeah. This is awesome. We've talked about a lot of these guys, you know, through text and like just messaging throughout the year. And so it's been really interesting to see how this draft class has evolved. It's a unique class. I don't want to call it a bad class, right? But I don't know. Watching this draft class is kind of like going to an average movie at the theater. Like, you don't have super high expectations. You're going in. You're still kind of excited because, hey, it's a movie on the big screen. So you talk yourself into it. And then midway through, you're kind of like, well, I hope this gets better. And then it doesn't. But it's not terrible either. And then you walk away and, you know, it was fine. And then you end up talking more about the previews, which are the 2027 prospects that, you know, you saw a glimpse. But holy cow, you know, they could, looks exciting. But I don't know. That kind of sums up my experience scouting this this class so far, and especially the first round guys. It's, I don't know, just an underwhelming group overall. But it's not a bad class either. And so there's plenty of guys that will step in from day one, help an NFL team, and now it's just up to, you know, all of us to kind of figure that out and get these guys stacked.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Fantastic Four for me then, in your movie analogy, where it was like, I was, you know, it was solid.
Yeah.
It got the job done. I was a little hyped for it, but actually kind of a little underwhelmed in the end. I think that's maybe a good way to put it, and especially now, as you know, as we talked about our kids before. It's very selective when I get to go to the movies. So if I go to a movie theater and it's just like, oh, okay, I'm just a little underwhelmed. Yeah, I'm a little disappointed. So I agree with it. A lot of green chips, I would say. You know, like maybe a couple years ago when we were doing Prospects of Pros and everything, and that class has turned out to be such a fun class. The Drake May, Caleb Williams class, and all the quarterbacks and all the receivers, all the offensive players. I think both of us had 15 blue chips, you know, true first round grades, you know, something like that. It was crazy. And then last year kind of dwindles back, you know, maybe single digits or so. And then this year it feels like a lot. There's a lot of good. There's a lot of players I like, not a lot of players I love. And I think that's the consensus. It makes me feel a little better. And sometimes where I'm like, man, I'm waiting for one of these guys to like really shine. There's gonna be a couple we talk about, but I'm just really kind of waiting for those types of guys. We'll see if some go into process. But yeah, I think we're kind of speaking the same language how this class looks so far.
Brock Bowers couldn't go in the top 10 that year. Quinyon Mitchell couldn't crack the top 20. Like, Cooper DeJean didn't go in the first round. Like, it was a crazy draft. And yeah, this one, you're coming back to earth a little bit. And again, not a bad draft, but, you know, I think it's important to set expectations. You know, a lot of teams are, you know, I was talking to a lot of Cowboys fans last night in my mentions with their playoff hopes all but dead and now looking towards the draft. And, you know, like, hey, like, I don't know that you're necessarily going to find someone in this draft that's going to swing things the other way right away. But, you know, you need a linebacker. This is a good group for you. You know, there's a few corners
if you need a linebacker. We got a class for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Linebackers, tight ends. There's a lot of those guys.
Yeah. 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 We'll start with that. What are the strengths of this class to you? Linebackers, I think, is the obvious one, which is so fun because it's been so dire at that position for so long. But linebackers, any other positions that you think are true strengths in this class?
Tight ends just deep as heck. I mean, Kenyon Sadiq obviously is the headliner. You know, I don't think he's quite Brock Bowers, but he's just a notch below. You know, he's on his tail. And so a team in the top 15 is going to get a really good player, and watch it be the Chiefs, and they replace Kelsey with Sadiq, and just
you know, like that.
Exactly. I think pass rusher, like, even though I'm not smitten with the guys at the top, I don't think it's, you know, it's not a great top 10, top 15 for those pass rushers, but I think that borderline first round, borderline top 50, and even borderline top 100, there's a lot of those guys, and it's a deep, deep group, seniors, underclassmen. So edge rusher, I think, is definitely needs to be mentioned. Wide receiver, I think I've done a offensive tackle and wide receiver, I've kind of done a 180 on those. Like, offensive tackle, I was really optimistic coming into the year, and it's gone the opposite way for me. Wide receiver, I was a little more pessimistic, and now I'm a lot more optimistic, just based off of how these guys performed. I mean, Carnell Tate, Jordan Tyson, Kiese Concepcion's been awesome for Texas A&M. You know, even though it's underclassmen, you know, reliant in terms of, especially with Chris Bell, Louisville wide receiver, going down with the ACL, which is such a bummer. So it does really depend on a lot of these underclassmen, but that's usually a position that gets a lot of help from the juniors. So wide receiver, it should be a pretty solid class as well.
Yeah, that's when that's the class or the position that's really grown on me. I liked a lot of guys this summer, but now it's like, wow, I was trying to keep less, fewer. We texted about this because I did my big board maybe a couple weeks before you did. And I was like, I have way more receivers than I thought I would. And I actually had to keep a couple off. Like, you know, I just did the top 30, you do top 50. And I was like, I could throw about three more in here that I can easily make an argument for, which is also speaks a lot about, like, at the NFL level, how hard it is to find some of these spots. It's like, you kind of get a receiver in a lot of different rounds and a lot of different flavors with a lot of different tiers that actually can outplay their position. Well, I agree with you. The tackle class has been, we'll just start with the first game because this actually kind of segues perfectly into all of this. Is the first game I want to talk about is James Madison, Oregon. Sorry to James Madison. We'll start with Oregon and their prospects. But just even speaking about Isaiah World, who I, going into the season, I as a top 15 player, a transfer from Nevada, left tackle for Oregon. And I think he's just been so underwhelming this entire year. Like, I wouldn't say outright bad, but I would also just say, this is it with Isaiah World, where I don't think you even had him on your top 50. I had him off my top 30. I have him as a day two grade so far right now, just because traits. But then you have other guys for Oregon that have stepped up. Emmanuel Pregnon, am I saying that name correctly? The guard, I really like him. Yep. You had him in your top 50 as well. But Oregon is pretty loaded at several positions. You mentioned Sadiq. We got Dante Moore. We can talk about this quarterback class as well. Amari Washington. But who are the guys that catch your eye with Oregon? How do you rate them? And really, just for anybody watching college football playoffs, you're tuning in maybe for the first time, these are some of the guys that to focus on for them.
Yeah, and, I mean, since you started with Isaiah World, I will too. I mean, I'm with you. The traits, you know, he has ideal NFL size, above average length, extension. He's played a lot of football. And because he has played a lot of football, I expected more than what he gave us this year. Now, I do think he's very physical in the run game. He's got the strength. He can redirect bodies. But, man, the stiffness in his hips really shows. He struggles to sink his weight consistently. There are some limitations with the short area quickness. And for a guy that has played a lot of football, I think he's still technically raw. You know, sometimes he'll set too wide in pass pro. You know, he'll get blown off the ball because his timing's not right.
His hands are all over the place.
Right. Yeah. And that's not what you want to see from a guy that's played as much football as he has. So I think he'll go top 100. I put a fourth round grade on him. I couldn't go higher than that. Now, because teams need tackles and I think he's got traits that coaches will want to develop and work on. I think he'll go somewhere on day two, but just with my grade, I couldn't get there. So World's been disappointed, but Pregnon's been kind of the opposite. He's a guy that started at Wyoming, goes to USC, and there was some buzz on him at USC. I don't know that he necessarily lived up to that, but then he goes to Oregon this year and he's been awesome. I think he's squarely put himself in that day two range, has a chance to be a second round pick. Harkey, the right tackle, has a chance to get drafted. He'll be an inside player at the next level. He'll be a guard or center, not a tackle, but you know, there's a lot to like about him. But if we're talking Oregon offense, I mean, we got to talk about Dante Moore, right? I mean, this is, and we still don't know if he's going to be in this draft class, you know, kind of we have to start with that. Losing his offensive coordinator, Will Stein, going to be the head coach of Kentucky, that could be a needle mover in terms of his decision. We'll have to wait and see on that. But how he plays in the playoffs could also determine a lot of things for him. You know, there's just, he's still 20 years old. He's a very loose passer, smooth with his setup, his operation, his release. I think just a natural thrower of the football. He can change his arm angles. He can throw around defenders. He's very good in the screen game, you know, like perimeters, tunnels. He gets the ball out really fast, but he can also attack every level of the field. Do you want him to layer the ball in between coverages? He can do that. Some of the seam shots to Sadiq are just a thing of beauty.
The Rutgers game.
Oh,
that's the one that stands out to me because that was just a clinic tape. They could do whatever they wanted. So it was like, oh, yeah, here we go.
And they did.
Yeah, that was the game that fired me up. Yeah, yeah. They did. Exactly.
And I mean, I think that something I've been really impressed with is he just doesn't panic. You know, I think whether, there are times, there was once in the Indiana game, which wasn't his best game, but they threw an overload blitz at him and he had the reaction instincts to, okay, so they're going to do this? Okay, well, I'll just do this. And he finds a solution. And it's like, okay. I've been impressed with how much they put on his plate. And we really saw that in the Penn State game where it's the blocking wasn't showing up. The Penn State defense is playing really well. And it was all on the quarterback to make things happen. And it was really impressive to see everything that the offense put on his plate and he was able to respond, whether it was broken plays where he had to create really just going back to that game winning touchdown in overtime, the body malleability to avoid, I think it was Dennis Sutton, defensive end, 33, he's a naked keeper and he's able to avoid him, throw a strike, a game winner. So, I mean, Dante Moore, there's so much to like about what he put on film this year at such a young age, better polish than I expected for a guy that has 18 career starts or 17 career starts. Now I don't like that he looks like he's 200 pounds. That's an issue. I think
that's my one thing.
Yeah. I think he does predetermine a little too much, you know, and he will take off quicker than he needs to at times, just instead of, you know, find that backside read or just because I do think he will make up his mind a little bit too early and that sometimes his eyes are in the wrong place. But a lot of these things are just a young player. And so learning how to be more decisive when that first read's not there and especially under pressure, like I think these are things that will come. He showed enough to me this year that, if this guy comes out, I'm going to roll the dice and see what we have on him. So I do think Fernando Mendoza will be the first quarterback drafted, but Dante Moore, I still think if he comes out, he's somewhere in that top 10 mix.
I agree. I mean, you nailed everything. That he's very clean, and I think that's what surprised me too. He plays, and this is where I'll kind of agree with a lot of what you said, and kind of just expanding on that is that very clean. You can tell he's very well coached, and you can tell that, and what you say, they put a lot on him. You can see him thinking, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but you can see him going through everything that he has to go through, the checklist. But even when he plays post-snap, there's plays that he's very comfortable on, and he especially four verts, that would be one. That's where you see those seam throws. And you can see, okay, he's willing to rip it. But you can tell plays he's not very comfortable on, and you can tell maybe it's a weekly game plan play, and then he's like, that's not open, check it down. Like, you know, and this is not a bad thing. It's just that he's very safe right now. And but when you see him loose and playing aggressive, that's where I get excited. Again, we've worked together, you know, I kind of like the wild horses and rein them in.
You don't say.
His is, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. he's kind of like on the Dak Prescott, Teddy Bridgewater spectrum to me, archetype. Mm-hmm. As Dak is a pro, not college. And he's way smaller than Dak. Dak is 240. What was he at Mississippi State? 230, you know, and change. Teddy was skinnier at Louisville. They're kind of built similarly. But he's just very clean operator. He's a pro style quarterback. And I mean that in a good way. Some pressure can discombobulate him where he's like, he becomes very safe under pressure and very safe when it's not clean. Like you said, you kind of said predetermined because he's so good pre-snap. It's getting more comfortable post-snap. I think maybe that's the best way I could put it. I like him. I really do. I think now that Sellers has gone back, which I do not agree with, back to South Carolina, I thought he should either transfer or declare. The fact that he went back to South Carolina was like, wrong door. But with Moore, clearly QB2 behind me and closer to Mendoza, you know, not like I don't think there's a big tier difference between them. I think they're very close. I like Mendoza a little bit more, but I do like Moore. And I think obviously with this draft class and how desperate these teams are, this is a top 10 pick just because of how the makeup of this class. But we'll see how I'm excited to watch him in the playoff because, again, I always bring up the Rutgers game because that was the first game I saw him be aggressive and like because they're dominating. And I want to see in this playoff as he has more confidence. He's taking a deep breath. They didn't play in the Big Ten championship. He's had some time now. Maybe they can coax even more out of him and where he gets more comfortable with some of these plays. But I think we're kind of speaking the same language on it.
Yeah, when he played a lot, especially the back half of the year, without his top receivers. You know, they right. were injured. Yeah. And so the hope is they'll get healthy for
that they have.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
freshman receiver. Oh, that freshman yeah. running back, too. Oh, my God, Oregon. They got some dudes.
This is Oregon. Yeah. But yeah. I mean, no disrespect to James Madison, but
yeah,
Oregon's going to roll and they're going to face Texas Tech in the next round. And that's going to be a lot of fun because the Red Raiders pass rush led by David Bailey, they'll get after you. And so can the Oregon pass protection step up? And then how does Dante Moore respond to that when you need to make a play and you know that they're coming, and can he do it consistently? So that'll be a fun litmus test, I think. And you know, you look at the quarterbacks that have had under 20 starts just coming out of college, it's not a very exciting list. So like there's a part of me that says, you know, like go back to school, you know, you're going to Oregon pays well. You know, you're going to get better and better and better and you're be a top guy next year. But man, it'd be tough to pass up being a top 10 pick now. That's you just don't know what's going to happen in a year from now. So he'll have a big decision to make here coming up.
That's what I keep coming back to, Dane. And I because the NIL just has changed so much of the equation, and I get that. But I was breaking it down I've done this on a couple shows now, but with Charles the other day, and I was just kind of doing the math of it. If you're a top 20 pick, if you think you're a top 20 pick, which he is, like I think by consensus, this is not just me and you. I just think just gathering what I've seen and what I've heard, it's like everyone's kind of on the same page. It's how high you think of them, but it's a first rounder. You got to declare, I think economic wise, like because you know, yeah, he's probably gonna get, if he goes back to Oregon, $4 million, $5 million maybe, but I could get that 4 years, $4 million a year guaranteed for the next 4 years plus. You know, if you're a top 20 pick, and so that again, this is his decision and what he wants to declare. Maybe Oregon goes on a run, and then it's like, oh wow, I can John Elway it, you know, college wise, and just declare, and hey, it's all great. So we, you know, go out on top. So we kind of just don't know. I understand both arguments, but for me, I'm like, declare. Like you can't guarantee you're going to be like, who knows? Next year's tape comes out and everyone's like, oh, okay, is that it? As opposed to now where it's like, well, we got to take it. Sometimes having not that many starts, we can say this all now. Oh yeah, you got to go to the Parcells thing. You can't have any more starts. Once draft time comes and the draft cycle happens, teams talk themselves into so much and then they do not care about those starts. They're going to find any angle on them. So I've really liked his progression this year. I'm really keen on watching it to like this next month, because I think there could be more. And even just talking about you were talking about the rest of the Oregon offensive line. I think their offensive line coach is really good, Alik Terry. That's why I was so optimistic about World, and that's why I think you had a fourth round grade. I would say I was probably a late day two grade, just because of his traits. I'm going to be a sucker for that. I was hoping he'd be like a Patrick Paul. From Houston, big, played a lot of starts, was raw, but he's so tradey that maybe he can step up. But the fact that he's been developed under, you know, a good coach has made me less optimistic about World, because it's like, well, you already got some good coaching and this is what you're showing so far. So defensively, they have some players too, Oregon. Amari Washington, Yeah. You had him 30th or so on your big board.
Sounds right. Yeah.
Somewhere around there. Yep. Yeah. And then Mateo Ugalele. Yeah. I always butcher his name. And then is it Dylan Thineman from Purdue? That out Oregon, the safety. He's fun. You can see his dynamic, but a very fun spine of the defense, you know, that Oregon's got going on.
Yeah, Bryce Betcher, the linebacker, former baseball player. Like he's a lot of fun. I don't know that he'll sneak into the top 100, but someone will get him on day three, mid-round pick, and at the very least, he'll be a special teams demon for a lot of years. Oregon's got a lot of guys on that side of the ball, and Washington has been a lot of fun to watch because of his agility and how much he shows up in the run game. Now, I wish he impacted the pass a little bit more, but if you are, you know, a redshirt sophomore, you're just a young player and you're showing me this much promise right away, man, I can get on board with what you're going to look like 2 years from now, 3 years from now. If he comes out, someone in the first round, I think, is going to be more than happy to take Washington. That defensive line as a whole has been really impressive. Tuitui, the other kind of edge rusher, linebacker, like his dad's a defensive line coach there. Like he's a guy that is wired the right way, plays with his hair on fire. Oregon's got a few of these guys that are just relentless, and NFL teams are looking at it like, all right, yeah, we can use one of those guys. Thienemann, he'll be, I'm very eager to see how he should test well. And I think that's when you're talking about a safety who can play center field, can work, you know, from top down with speed and has ball production. Like, all right, that's you're talking my language here. And so I think that if he comes out, he'll be in that, you know, Caleb Downs is going to be the first safety drafted most likely. And then that safety two wide open, he could be right there in that mix. So yeah, this is an Oregon team that is, I actually thought they were going to win it last year. And then Ohio State just, went on a heater. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they get past Texas Tech. And then I think that would probably set up a rematch with Indiana, right? And then that would be a lot of fun, because that first one in Eugene was that was a great game for both sides. Indiana came out on top. Give Mendoza so much credit for he throws a pick six the very next drive. He leads him down like 12 plays for the go ahead touchdown, like just typical Mendoza stuff. So that would be a lot of fun to see that rematch again. And then this team as a whole, they've got a lot of dudes, and if you're a scout, you're paying close attention to the Ducks.
I was bullish on Indiana going into the year, and Mendoza, we'll talk about them. That Oregon game was when I was like, oh, I might have been even too low. Like, because I was like, hey, I know everyone thought the last year was a fluky thing, easy schedule. Ooh, they're going to play a gauntlet this year. I was like, man, they're really well coached. I don't know, man. I know I'm an NFL guy, but I'm just observing. Like, I don't know. They're pretty good. That Oregon game, because the first month or so of the season before they played Indiana, I was like, man, Oregon's like 2001 Miami fast. Like, they looked so fast on film when I was watching all these guys. And then Indiana was going step for step with them. And that's when I changed everything in my head. I was like, that's why when they played Ohio State in the Big Ten Championship, I was like, I don't know, guys. Indiana's got more athletes than I think people realize.
They're not the plucky underdog that is just scratching and crawling. Everyone's
picturing like Wisconsin or something like that. Yeah. Like where it's just like, oh, these guys are all maxed out, fourth round. Right. No, it's like they got speed.
They got
their skill guys.
And, it's funny. A lot of them are James Madison guys that came over with Coach Cignetti.
I know.
But, I mean, we'll talk about Indiana more here, but I mean, it's been a lot of fun to watch that transformation this year.
It has been. All right, we'll go into the next game. This is 8 versus 9. We got Oklahoma versus Alabama. Oklahoma, really, just even on your top 50 and even while I watched them, no one really kind of stood out that much. I believe you have R. Mason Thomas, the edge rusher. You've got some juice to him. John Maitier, their quarterback, has kind of tapered off, banged up. Could have predicted it based on his play style, but it was just that's what kind of what's going to happen to him throughout this year.
Jackson Dartish.
And then Alabama. He's got some Dartish. I know a Heineke when I see one. and then Alabama, though, has got some, you know, like interesting prospects. Obviously, Ty Simpson, the quarterback, probably will go back to school, I'm going to guess, maybe based on how the last month or so has gone. And then Jeremy Bernard, the receiver, interesting. I think he's a nice little secondary receiver. Some other guys, but anyone in this game really to focus on. I got some trench play in here, too.
Yeah, or Mason Thomas. He's definitely the guy to watch for Oklahoma. You said juice. That's exactly. I mean, he's undersized. Yeah. There's no way around that part of it. But
was he? Do you have official measurements on him?
I do.
Sorry to put you on the spot.
This is
great because I love getting you, and I can add on to my notes.
6'0", 6'5", 249, and then
wow, that's actually bigger than I thought.
Yeah. His length wasn't great.
Okay. Maybe that's why.
I
was going to guess he was 6'1 flat, like 238 or something like that.
Yeah. And so, I mean, we first saw him when going up against Will Campbell last year. And I was like, okay, who's this guy?
Yeah.
Will Campbell didn't give up a lot of sacks, and our Mason Thomas was able to get him. 31 3/4. 8 5/8 hands, 77.5 wing. So, yeah, not a big guy. Like, he won't be for everybody, but as a guy you drop into your rush rotation, he could be a nice little changeup that really puts some heat on the pocket. So our Mason Thomas, definitely a guy to watch. This as a whole, there's a lot of underclassmen on this defense, this Oklahoma defense, but it's a really good group. And I think, yeah, for Ty Simpson, it's the Alabama quarterback. The first 2 months of the year, it's like pre-Halloween, post-Halloween. Before Halloween, it's like, all right, I really like this guy. Like, he's, for a first-year starter, the way that he is operating, how quickly he's going through his reads, eliminating things, finding the third read, hitting him in stride. Like, it's like, okay, you're doing a lot of NFL things here. Like, you throw in that Georgia tape, and it's like, all right, yeah, like, this is a lot of promise here. But then post-Halloween, it looked like a different quarterback. And not to take blame away from him, but the run game was terrible. The blocking wasn't very good. The receivers were very up and down. So, like, it was just the offense as a whole was a mess. And so I'm very interested to see if Alabama came back on track against a really good Oklahoma defense in Norman. This will be a big test for them. Because, yeah, Ty Simpson, he turns 23 this month. Like, he's an older guy, but only 1 year as a starter. So he really needs another year. But is this going to be like a Carson Beck situation where, like, Alabama's got a really talented redshirt freshman kid from Texas that, can you hold on to both these guys? Do you have to say goodbye to one of them? I'm very interested to see how this game plays out and how that might impact Ty Simpson's decision. He needs to go back. I think there's no question about that. But how this game plays out, does that nudge him in a certain way about what to do? So, yeah, it'll be really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, with him, because I mean, it was almost like with Nussmeier last year, where it was like, okay, you don't have ideal size, but God, look at him fling that football. Man, look at him push that football. Oh man, look at that trick shot he just threw. This is awesome. Oh man, he scrambled a little bit. And then just over time, it was just the spray. He would have some sprays, even in his good games, but it was like, okay, that's fine. You can have a couple. But then that became more common. I wonder if you got banged up. That's something that happens too. Like,
smaller guy.
Just over smaller guy and over the season and everything. But I agree with you. He has to go back to it for another year. But I was very encouraged. But I was, like you said, pre-Halloween and even some glimpses in other games. Like, he could at any moment drop a S-tier throw that just opens the game up. But also at the same time, he could spray some throws. I agree kind of with the receivers too. Like, Ryan Williams was kind of a little more inconsistent at times than maybe I was expecting. And then I like Bernard, and I, like I said before, as a secondary guy or secondary receiver type, I have a day two grade on him. And then their tackle, that's actually what I'm curious about too, is Caden Proctor, who's had started the season just blah, but has had a little bit better since then. But I think that would be really fun going against our Mason Thomas. I mean, that should it's one of those where it's like, all right, this is a great question to answer for Thomas. Can you go against a gigantic tackle? And it's perfect for Proctor. Can you handle anybody with any semblance of speed that can work around you? So I that's actually kind of a fun little trench matchup in this game too.
Yeah, and in Proctor, he's an explosive athlete for that size. For 360 pounds, like, he can move pretty well. It's more of a like he's just thinking way too much when he's trying to reach those landmarks. And so, you know, when you're thinking too much, then your hands aren't on the same page as your feet and you're late reacting to what the rusher is showing you. And that's where things start to unravel for Proctor. And so it's not necessarily that he doesn't have the physical ability to, you know, stay on an island. It's just, he needs to be cohesive with all these different talents that he has. I think he'd be an awesome guard because of that sheer size, and he's less thinking and more just playing. And, but you know, if you could stay on the outside and be a tackle, obviously that's where teams were going to want to keep you. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. This would be a great matchup for him. It's funny talking to scouts about Proctor. There's still some that are hanging on saying like, look, you don't find guys like this. They're rare dudes. When you're that size, can move like that, you have promise, you have upside still. Then other guys are just like, I can't put a grade on him that is higher than second round. You know, I just can't do it. I based off of what we've seen and what he's put on film, and maybe he'll get better, and I hope he does, but I just can't, you know, put my stamp on him at this point. And so there's definitely a very split opinion. And that's honestly with a lot of guys this year. And we'll talk about Reuben Bain here in a minute, but Proctor is definitely one of those guys that's just a lot of split opinion from scouts about what he is at the next level and how early you should draft him. And to your point, going up against a lightning bolt off the edge like R. Mason Thomas, that'll certainly be under a microscope as scouts kind of pick both these guys apart.
Because that's all I want to see is, all right, how do you handle just speed, consistent speed, like real speed, NFL speed, as opposed to like, okay, kind of fast college guy. I'm always a guy that defers to size and everything. And then, I have J.C. Latham in my head because of Proctor, whether that's fair or not. And Latham has had some issues. And that's the thing with Proctor, has the early woes. I'm like, oh, there it is. See? And then as I watched him, I thought he has become a little more consistent with some of his stuff. I think you nailed it about how he's thinking too much. I think because that's in his head, especially maybe week one. Okay, I got to do this. Like almost, I was kind of talking about this with Dante Moore, where they're coached well, where they're like, okay, I got to do this drill. Okay, I got to remember this, as opposed to just playing football and using your gifts and everything. And that's every position. And again, he's young. And it's a position that you hopefully develops over time and stuff. But I actually agree with you that I think he could be like, kind of like how Mekhi Becton, at least for the Eagles, was at guard, where he's just like a power guard that actually moves fairly well. Like, I don't know. I've come around on him. You have him at 18. I think I had him like 22 on my big board. So the same tier.
He could be drafted ninth. He could go 29th. I don't think either would surprise me. You know, like,
I just watch it. Bill Callahan takes one look at him. I hear he has Latham. But I mean, some of these line coaches, though, are going to see him and go, oh, just wait until I get my hands on him. It's exactly what's going to happen.
And especially he's gonna go top 20. This draft where.
Correct.
And I apologize.
There's going to be a lot of that.
Putting you on the spot. But how many guys have you watched where you thought, I'll be shocked if this guy's not a top 10 pick in this draft? Like Mendoza. Maybe three, throw more in there.
Four?
And then, like, I mean, Reese? It's Mendoza and Arvel Reese and maybe Dante Moore. I think those are the only three that I...
And Moore? Yeah.
I mean, even like Downs more for
like
you
safety,
that
safety, so, you know, and it's like, I'm high on Keldrick Falk, but I know not a lot of people are. That's not a consensus opinion.
Yeah. And I'm with you on Falk. Thing. I like him in the top 10.
Yeah.
But I don't. Yeah. I wouldn't put my mortgage on the fact that he would go that high. And Jeremiah Love and Caleb Downs, they might be two of the three best players in the draft, period. But they're running back at a safety, and there's just no guarantee that they're going to go that high because of
the best corners going off an ACL. McCoy.
Yep.
You know, Tyson's got injuries. The receiver. You know, Jordan Tyson. He's got injury stuff, and then the receiver class also has just a lot of good. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, but not that true blue. Oh, this is the number one, and then it's good. It's like just a bunch of guys I consider in the same tier in a good way.
Yeah. And you say something similar about the offensive linemen, where there's not a clear top guy where this guy has to go high. I mean, I really like Spencer Fano.
My number one tackle is like you have at like 40th, I think, on your big board.
Oh, so it's Lomu?
I'm a sucker for Lomu. I think he's the one. So, but you have Fano, his teammate, who is my tackle too. Yeah. But there's no consensus on any of this. So I'm with you. Two, Lomu three guys,
is,
I say.
He is fascinating because I know one scout has a third round grade on him. Another one has a fifth round grade on him. And then another one thinks he's going to go first round. Like, it's just,
yeah,
it's all over the place on him. And it sounds like he's coming out, which at one point looks like he's going back. Now it looks like he's coming out. I don't know. I mean, I think that, you know, that's what's going on right now behind the scenes, is they're kind of figuring out all these things. And, you know, guys are making their final decisions. Some guys already made their decision. They're, you know, they've been locked in with an agent, and but other ones are a little more, maybe I should go back. And, you know, what's the dollars if I do go back? And, you know, I got a chance to get better. And so, that's always an interesting part of this part in the calendar.
Yeah, there's no consensus in this class, if anyone can gather that. We'll move on to, I think, a game actually we can be having consensus on, that there's not a ton of prospects in this game. No offense, I'm still going to watch it. That's Tulane Ole Miss. Yeah. I wanted to say the Battle of the Bayou, but, you know, it's a nice little South matchup here. Anyone in this game, Dane? I do not have a top, I would even say a top 50 player from these teams. I don't think you do either, to be honest. I think I glanced at it and didn't see anyone, but anyone to watch in this game, though, just to make it interesting.
I don't know that I have a top 100 player in this.
Okay.
In this game. Like Ole Miss, they've got a handful of guys that'll get drafted. Now maybe if some of their underclassmen came out, like, Deuce Alexander, the receiver, really like him.
Okay.
Maybe he's got a chance to go day two. Perkins, the linebacker, I've got more of a fourth, fifth round grade on him, maybe because he should test well. Maybe he'll sneak into the top 100. But yeah, for the most part, it's a lot of day three guys. Diego Pounds, the left tackle, the defensive tackle, Harris, big boy, 6'7", 330, big guy. They've got a couple receivers, Stribling, Wallace, that'll probably be drafted late. So yeah, for Ole Miss, and then we'll see what happens with Trinidad Chambliss, who is, Ole Miss is very confident. Talking to people at Ole Miss throughout the season, they were very, very confident he was coming back and that they'd get him for one more year. Now, obviously, with the coaching change, does that mean he's going to LSU?
Did Ole Miss have a coaching change?
Yeah, really? could he stay? Was there enough coaches that stayed put and, you know, where he liked Ole Miss? And I don't know. So we'll have to see what happens with Chambliss, what his next move. But I think it's more likely he's either back at Ole Miss or he transfers. And then the draft would be probably the third most likely scenario. But Ole Miss is a good team. They just, in terms of NFL prospects, they don't have a lock, like, top 100 guy this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And it's funny how even Chambliss wasn't even their guy to start the year and then just kind of became their guy. And he's so much fun. So if you have not watched any of Ole Miss this year, he is worthy of watching.
Undersized, not sure how NFL, but...
He's more college good than pro good, right. I will say, but worth watching as far as just, especially in this type of game. I mean, both of these teams are in it for a reason. I think Tulane has been so well coached. Obviously, they had some coaching stuff too, but deservedly so. And then their quarterback from last year, which is so funny that they lose Mensah, who goes to Duke, and then they make the playoff without him, which I think is pretty funny. That's not how the narrative, I think, should have gone. It's like, no, you lose your guy, you don't make the playoffs the next year. So, this game is more like Chambliss is fun. I didn't have any prospects, so I was very curious if you had a guy, but I'm kind of, actually makes me feel a little better because we're on the same page with all those guys. Let's get to the next one, because actually this game's got some juicy matchups. We got Miami, Texas A&M. Miami's 10 seed. Texas A&M's the 7 seed. Start where you want, Dane. I'll give you a dealer's choice on this one because I think there are some really fun prospects in this one. So whoever you want to talk about first.
I think we got to start in the trenches, right?
Yeah.
And I think really the matchup I'll be most interested to watch is Cassius Howell, the Texas A&M pass rusher.
Yep.
Going up against Miami right tackle Mauga, who this could be a battle of first round picks right here. Howell's another undersized rusher, under 31 inch arms. He's in terms of burst off the edge and just that arc acceleration, he is a dynamo. He gives tackles a lot of trouble. SEC best 11 and a half sacks this year, but scouts want to see him be a little bit better in the run game, a little bit better with the secondary moves, like just show us you're a more complete player. And with Mauga, I mean, he's been probably the most consistent offensive tackle that I watched all year. Now, it hasn't always been amazing, but in terms of just consistency, he has been rock solid. Now, I think he looks like a guard.
I think length. He's a guard.
Yeah.
I think 100% a guard. Yeah.
I don't know what the length might be. 33. It might, you know, it might be exactly okay. 33. But I think that just the way he plays, the skill set, the style, I some teams are going to look at him and say, we'll let him fail at tackle. Others are going to just look at him and say, this guy's an awesome guard and we're going to move him inside. So for both these players, I think it's going to be a really fun matchup to see, okay, who gets the better of the other. And, last time we saw Howell was probably the worst game of the season against Texas. You know, Trevor Goosby was awesome at left tackle. So can Howell kind of rebound and have a better one, better game, better performance in this one? And like I said, show that he's more than just a, win with that first step and win with quickness and athleticism and just do more than that, because I think he has a chance to be a first round pick when it's all said and done.
What do you think about Goosby, by the way, the Texas left tackle?
I like him. It sounds like he's going back. His brother, okay, big time basketball player, just signed with Texas. And so I think that's a part of it. And if you're Sark, obviously you're blank check to keep your left tackle to help Arch. Yeah. And, a lot of receivers coming back and doing what they can to keep Wisner. Like they're trying to bring the band back together on that offense.
Yeah, which they should.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so we'll see, but it sounds like Goosby's going back. But I've been pleasantly surprised with him, because it started rough. He's really a first year starter, but he got better and better and better. Once he gets his hands on you, man, it feels like it's over. We saw that on the A&M tape. It was pretty impressive. So, but it sounds like Goosby more of a 2027 prospect.
That's why I figured. I assumed it with him, but I just wasn't sure.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he's if he comes out, I think someone will need to talk more about for sure. With this matchup, staying in the trenches on the other side, Reuben Bain and Mezidor, Miami pass rushers, going up against A&M's tackles are pretty good. Trey Zune, left tackle, he'll be more of an inside player, but scouts grade him as a guy that can play all five positions in a pinch. He won the Jacobs blocking trophy for top guy in the SEC. Crownover at right tackle. He is a former tight end, 6'7", 335, massive dude who, it's not always clean. It's a little sloppy at times, but when you have those traits, you're going to go. And so I won't be surprised at all if he's a top 100 guy. But I'm eager to see how these pass rushers do. I finished my Reuben Bain evaluation last week. Just finished up like the last month and a half of games. I was underwhelmed.
A little better.
he's a good player. Like, there's no doubt about that. But I won't be surprised if he is not a top 15 pick. Just when it's all, like, he's going to get picked. It's coming. He's going to get picked apart through the process. And, like, you know, his arms, they're under 31 inches. And, you know, like, I've mentioned this before on my pod, but there are several teams that have him as a defensive tackle right now. On their board.
Those are his best reps.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, okay, your body type and the way you play, there's not a lot of scouts that are just screaming, all right, yeah, this is you. This is what the edge rusher we're missing. And some teams have him inside a defensive tackle. Some just have, you know, they're kind of out on him as a first round pick, saying someone's going to like him more than we do. So Bane's all over the place in terms of scouting opinions in the league. But then also just, you know, myself, I was underwhelmed with the ways that he wins and just wanting more out of a player we're talking about as a guy we thought would go top 10. Now I'm not so sure.
When I did the updated big board and I kind of caught up on the games, because it's just so funny how it works. Because I'm so excited about it all. So I watched the initial games and I'm like, oh, I don't really care about this Western Carolina matchup. So I'm just going to wait a month or two to get some more games to watch. And his, at first, you know, first few weeks of the season, I'm like, wow, maybe I was too low on him. You know, I had him, I think, at 19th on my big board or so. And I was like, man, okay, maybe I was too low. I know he was highly recruited and all that, had a nice freshman year. And I actually thought I was more of the high guy on him. I compared him to Brandon Graham like kind of said, like, that's the same play style. Graham had 32.25-inch arms, which makes me feel a little better. I'm with you. Cause then when I did my updated big board and I watched more recent games, I was kind of like, all right. Like, there just wasn't like the dominant reps, like the, which you take a guy in the top 10. Yeah. I barely see some flashes of just like absolute dominant taking over updated? The game, unblockable. I think I had him at 4 or 5. So I had him. Yeah. But I think I would, even if I did it again after watching this last month, he'd probably be more in the teens, you know, a 12th ish, somewhere like that. I think his best reps, I'm glad they said the D tackle, like that little tidbit there, because I think his best reps are inside, and where he can use the power. He doesn't have to, like, his kind of lack of flexibility isn't as exposed as much. Yeah, he's just very, I don't want to say rigid. He's not the most stiff player I've ever seen, but very straight line. How his attack is very straight line. If he's not, he doesn't get that initial pop, he's kind of dead. And that's where you want length and bend, because you want to recover or have a second move off of it. So it's all like within the first second. I, at first it was like, oh, well, Jared Verse has kind of proven me wrong a little bit. And so maybe, but Verse is so much longer and kind of just has a little bit more to him. So yeah, I'm kind of, actually makes me feel better that others are struggling with him, because I like started medium, got high, and I've kind of come back down to medium on him. I've started liking more other players at his position in this class.
In the preseason, so my August top 50, he started at 39, because I struggled with him over the summer. It's like, okay, I see flashes here. Like, he's doing some things. Had a better freshman year than sophomore year. I like him, but I didn't see him as a first round guy. And then September happens. It's like, oh wow, okay, yeah. In September, this is the best so far, his best defensive player I've seen. Like, he's the impact that he's making. And then the more you got into it, October, November, it's like, all right. Like, is he Brandon Graham or is he Vinny Curry? Which isn't, it's not a negative. It's not like he's a bad player. It's just when you,
it's a great comp.
When you put a player under the lens, I think I have to shout out, I believe Fran Duffy gave me that one. I think that's where I got that from.
Another Keldrick Falk aficionado.
Yeah, absolutely. But like, once you, when you put him under the lens of a top 10 pick, it just, it changes the equation in terms of how you scout him. It's not that he's a bad player by any means, but you really start to pick guys apart. And like, I think you're absolutely right. The arc acceleration is just, the arc athleticism is not prototypical to what you normally want at that position. You know, and the body type is not really, you know, pear-shaped, short arms. You know, it's just not really what you're looking for as at the edge rusher position. Now, I think he's going to be a good pro. But if you expect him to be a top five pick, come in and really reshape the way that you play your fronts and rush the quarterback, you're probably going to be disappointed. If you bring him in as someone that's going to be an important part of your defensive line rotation and going to give you quality reps, I think, you know, that's more of the realistic expectation for him. And that's not a bad thing. It's just, we have to reset a little bit, you know, kind of some of that early hype. And I mean, you know, we're both responsible for that, because we were both high, you know, that's the problem with doing this.
We were trying to check ourselves and go like, whoa, maybe we're just too low on them. And then it's like, now it's kind of actually more in between maybe what we had, you know, that's kind of how it's ended up.
That's the struggle with doing this, like in the moment where you're like, you don't want to react to one game or one. And that's why, like, I don't do my updated top 50 until we get past Halloween. And I had Ty Simpson high off of the first 2 months. I was like, all right, let's see 2 months of film.
I get it.
Yeah, okay. I really like it. And then November happens. It's like, all right, well, that changes a lot. So, yeah, and I think Reuben Bain's caught up in this as well, who is a good player. I think he will be a first-round pick. But it was not surprising to hear some NFL teams see him as not a first-round pick. You know, it's just opinions are going to be pretty all over on him.
You're talking about the dangers of, you know, doing this week to week. And you got to remember, like, a lot of the NFL decision makers, it's like, now is right when they start watching these guys. Like, I mean, the real guys on top, like the GMs, the assistant GMs, the directors of player personnel. And they look at it, oh, what were your four best games? Okay, now I can watch all these. They don't go into the,
Arch Manning's awesome. Arch Manning sucks. Arch Manning's awesome. Arch Manning sucks week in, week out. He's the biggest bust ever. He's the number one pick. Conversations happen every week. Not sure if you knew, I got in the headlines for saying that he would be the number one pick this year. Yeah.
I did see that. I left it alone because I wasn't, I don't even want to hear that heat. But credit to you for going out there and putting it. I mean, and I don't, hey. If Arch Manning came out, I think he'd go top 10. I don't know if he would definitely go number one, but I think he would go top 10. Right. So I'm not far off from where you are on him.
I know. It was, that was one of those where it was like a 10 second conversation turned into a lot more than that. but that's just kind of how it goes. It's just even the reaction to that is everyone goes, he sucks. He's the biggest bust. It's like, well, you probably haven't watched in a while. Like you watched a couple weeks and against Ohio State, who has probably one of the best defenses in the NFL or in the NFL with NFL defense coordinator, I should say, but with a lot of top 10, top 20 picks. And so it was just kind of one of those things where I totally agree with you. I think quarterbacks more than any other position, but yeah, a lot of these guys, it's like, I relearn it every year because I'm so excited to watch them in September. And I'm like, I don't care about these games. Like I don't even know if Florida State's good. And then it turns out, no, you know, and then a couple months later, it's like, oh, actually this team's good. This is better film than I expected. Vanderbilt's better film than I expected them to be. Like if, say like for like Ty Simpson or Alabama guys, oh, the Vanderbilt film's actually good to watch as opposed to a couple years ago, that's not the film to watch, et cetera, et cetera.
We have the toughest jobs in the world. While we're talking about Miami pass rushers, though, I do want to mention Mezidor, he's a little bit tough because he's an older guy and he'll be a 25-year-old rookie. Like he's been banged up in the past. Like hopefully the foot's good with the medicals and all that. But you could argue he wins in more ways than Bain does. And so
a little more dynamic at times. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he's a guy that probably should go on day two as long as the durability and medicals are fine.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's definitely someone who should have an impact on this game as well.
Yeah. Some comparisons to Byron Young. I just mentioned Verse, but Byron Young, kind of the older guy, different kind of trajectory and timeline and everything that the Rams drafted as well. Casey Concepcion, the A&M receiver. He came from
NC State.
Georgia Tech? NC State. Yeah. Who's a Georgia Tech guy? Georgia Tech. These two smaller guys.
Singleton from Auburn.
Singleton. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Yes. They merge in my brain. Yeah. NC State. That's right. Very dynamic guy. He was in your top 30, I believe. Yeah. I have him as a day two guy. I really like him though. But just speak on him real quick. He's one of these interesting receivers. There's a lot of fun flavors of receivers in this class. There's going to be every year until the NFL folds in 200 years.
And like you said at the top, I thought this might be a year where maybe it's a year off from that, but no, it turns out.
Nope.
And look, NFL teams, they want playmakers, right? And Concepcion, not only was he first team all SEC receiver, but he's also first team all purpose because of what he is as a punt returner. And so like if there's a player in this game that can swing the outcome, I think it's Concepcion because his releases, his route separation, his ability to get open. And then once he gets his hands on the football, his athletic instincts just kind of take over and he consistently gets more yards than expected. So I think for Aggies to win this one, it's can Marcel Reed find number seven and just early and often hit him. Let your playmakers go do fun stuff. And so Concepcion, I think, is if you just look at it through NFL teams want playmakers. I have a hard time seeing him fall out of the first round, but he's a fun player and kind of in that similar vein of a guy that can swing the game. Yep. Carson Beck is a guy that a quarterback that some scouts just can't quit. Like
I get it, man. I get it.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff that he does. I'm like, all right, yeah, that'll work. Yeah, that'll translate.
He can run an offense, man.
I think that's not the exact
cup of tea, but I get it. Right. I totally get it.
The lack of second reaction plays and overall mobility, I think, just puts a cap on what he'll be at the next level. But if you're how far behind Tyler Shuck do you think he is as a prospect?
Right. They're same tier basically to me, because that's a grade I have on them. I had them both as kind of round three grade, more or less late two, round three, early three, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
So
this will be a big test. I mean, going up against I mean, he's familiar with the SEC, obviously, playing at Georgia. So going up against style of defense will be, you know, not anything he hasn't seen before. But on this stage with, like, if it just feels like so much at stake and, you know, it's either going to be his last college game or a chance to say, like, hey, you guys, remember me? And this is why you need to be talking right. more about me. Because I think, like, the quarterback one among the seniors is kind of wide open right now. I think you and I haven't totally given up our NUS stock, you know, but
no, Beck, I'm totally, right there. I mean, yeah, I'm not saying round one or anything right. like that, but no, I am not saying like, oh, he sucks now. It's
if
yeah,
we're talking I get pick 75, like, you know,
yeah.
I think, yeah. So, but yeah, Nussmeier is still going to be in that conversation, but Beck is right there. Drew Aller, it's going to be hard for him to get back into that top 100, but I mean, there's a lot going for him as a dart throw for some right. team. So yeah, there's plenty for Beck to play for at this point.
Yeah, I know. That's what always with quarterbacks. It's like, dude, it takes one. I always bring up the guy. There's been a few guys I've been drafting around three over the years, even around four. Shoot. Dylan Gabriel, that I'm just like, okay, like that's not, so that's why I've never like wave it away. It's like, hey, it just takes one team to like a guy in the meeting, and quarterbacks is truly eye of the beholder. I have what I like, teams that have what they like, you have what you like. Like we all have different preferences, but Beck can operate an offense when he's clean. He can spin the ball, put it on the money. I like how you put it, the second reaction stuff, you know, the ad-libbing is kind of like not his strength. And also going against this defense, Mike Elko is so good as a defensive play caller, and their third down stuff is insane. So that's just a great test. I love watching offenses go against A&M. Like, it's one of my favorite films every week. If it's like Nussmeier last year to watch, like, because they're going to test you like a real NFL defense tests you. And so you can see how they have to react pre-snap and post-snap. So I'm glad you brought it back, because I actually had a note on him. I almost forgot. I have a random side question before we jump into the teams that have the buys. Peter Woods, how long are his arms? Do you know?
I don't have verifieds on him, but that's a good question.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It does, Peter Woods, they don't defense look, tackle from Clemson.
But they don't look very long.
I know. I'm starting to look at that a little bit. I'm starting to click for me about some of my concerns with him outside of just Clemson being bad this year.
Yeah. I mean, Woods in my updated top 50 was like 13, 14 around there. Yeah, like he came in. I mean, he was like number one for me. So it's
he's
like
number one for me.
Yeah, I mean, yep. I really thought like this guy can be. He's not Jalen Carter, but he could be 80% of that. Maybe, you know, if everything goes right, 90%. So, and it just didn't go. It didn't happen. You have to be able to impact the quarterback more when you're this talented, and he just didn't do it consistently. But it's not like he's any less talented. There's talent there. It's just, what do we have to do to get more out of him? So, the combine's gonna be big for him. Just the exact measurables. What does he test? That'll go a long way to determining, you know, is he the first defensive tackle drafted, or is he the second? Is he the third? I'm a big Caden McDonald fan from Ohio State. You know, and they're different types of players, but yeah, Woods is a guy that has been underwhelming this year, and definitely, you know, he might be the poster of how we've talked about this top 10, just not living up to what we hoped it would be.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was number one with a bullet, and some alarm bells go off for me, and this is not fair to him. I've heard nothing about character. I've never interviewed him, never talked to him, all that stuff. But I always have some concerns sometimes with some high recruited D linemen that know they're going NFL. And then once the team starts tapering off, their effort starts tapering off. And that's why I see a little bit. And that's where I'm like, because NFL, man, you're not always going to be on a winning team, and it's going to be week 14. Still got to get you still got to play. And that's those guys I always kind of ding a little bit. And again, that might not be fair. It might be playing injury. I don't know. But just, yeah, he's been underwhelming. I have him kind of graded about the same with you. The flashes are still there, but I just had to ask, because it's just like, I don't know. I'm so underwhelming. I mean, he's one of 20 guys on the team that have been underwhelming. So it's not just him. That's just the entire organization, franchise, whatever it is. Team program. They're paid now. I can change on that. Let's get to the teams that have the buys, because these teams are all loaded. We'll start with the number one seed. That is the Indiana Hoosiers.
It's just crazy to hear. The number Isn't one it? Seed.
Number one seed. The two top finalists for the Heisman were Indiana and Vanderbilt's quarterbacks. We are in a brave new world. Fernando Mendoza, obviously the quarterback, but he's got a couple cool receivers. Elijah Surratt, he's had really good chemistry with, the back shoulders especially. He likes those big receivers on the outside. Omar Cooper has been a revelation, at least for me this year. Kind of more of a slot receiver, but dynamic. Against Oregon, I think he did. Had one of the coolest catches you'll see all year. Kind of like the one-handed one. Yeah. Their left tackle, Carter Smith. I know you like a little bit. I actually do too. And then I actually wanted to ask you about the running back a little bit. Not as like a top guy, but just an interesting prospect. But Indiana, who do they have? Because I think people keep thinking of them as this gritty overachievers, but they got some real talent on this team.
They do. And I mean, it starts with the quarterback, obviously. Won the Heisman Trophy. He's going to be the number one pick, most likely. And it'll be interesting to see who finishes with that top pick. If it's the Giants, then who trades up to go, to get the quarterback? And
they got to see if Dart's in the medical tent again before they make that pick.
This is true.
He had another concussion yesterday.
It's on the coaching staff, really. Like, I get it. Like, I want tough guys too. You can't run them. But yeah, you don't need to prove yourself every single time. But yeah, I mean, coaches have to protect him from himself. Plain and simple.
You do.
It's not a question of toughness. It's a question of just intelligence at this point. He's not going to see a second season, let alone a second contract, the way that things are going. So, yeah, I mean, if the Raiders finish with the top pick, I mean, Mendoza, he'll be in your neck of the woods.
I know. I know the Jets are smitten with Mendoza. I know that.
They've got the ammo. I mean, I know. Well, and they're in a unique spot where they don't have to force it. Like, if it just takes too much to get up to one, they have plenty of needs on that roster that they can address. And then next year, go get the quarterback. So, like, it's the Jets are in a unique spot. The Browns are in a really unique spot. Are the head coach and GM back? I would argue they're as desperate as anybody to go make this quarterback spot right. Like, last week Shador was, according to my Twitter feed, he was the answer. This week he's back to, being a bum. So who knows how they're going to let that thing play out. Yeah, it's a mess. But Mendoza is going to be most likely the top pick. And, I liked him coming into the year. Like, I had a first round grade on him. He's a top 20 guy. I wasn't ready to say like number one because he doesn't have the overwhelming physical traits that I usually want in a quarterback. He's very Jared Goff like, with the way he moves with, now he's probably maybe a little bit better athlete. Like it still looks awkward, but he's more mobile than you expect. And he can absolutely be, someone that get the yards if they're there. The arm isn't amazing, but it's good enough. It's not a deterrent. It's not something that'll hurt him, but you just wish it was a little bit better. But what sets him apart is just the intelligence pre and post snap. He's so, so good for this offense. It's RPO heavy, and he just, he understands it. And like, you would think he's been in this offense for 4 years, not that he just showed up and he hasn't been in this offense for even a year. So give him, I mean, he's a really smart guy, graduated with his, business degree from Cal, and he's working on his MBA right now, and just really, really smart kid. You just start to run out of reasons why, all right, why can't this guy be a high level starter? I always say this when we talk about quarterbacks, like the goal is not to find the next Josh Allen. It's just not realistic. That should not be the goal. The goal when drafting a quarterback is to find someone that you think can be a top 12 to 14 quarterback in the league. If you feel like you can find one of those guys, that's all you need to do, because then surround him with talent, coaching, and personnel, and you're going to be fighting for the playoffs. And then once you get in the playoffs, it's like, okay, just win one game at a time, and eventually we'll get to where we need to be. So do you think Mendoza can be a top 14 quarterback in the NFL? I certainly do at this point, and I think a lot of teams are going to come to that same conclusion, and that's why he's going to go number one.
He's got like in the most legendary pro day throwing ever. I think he threw it Indiana's day. And I, no lie, Dane, I've had at least four people talk to me about that pro day. And that was after, because he was my number one quarterback when I did the too early big board. And then I broke him down And when I wrote after him, a couple of people reach out to me. They're like, dude, were you at that pro day? And I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. People are like, you just seen him spinning it, man. And I was like, oh, okay, okay. Like, all right, that's interesting. Good to know. But would you talk about the grasp of the offense, even at Cal, which was RPO heavy as well. But their offensive line was just atrocious at Cal. And he took a lot of sacks. And that was the big thing. I was like, all right, is that because of you or is that because of the offense? I thought it was mostly because of the offense. And it was just RPO, but it wasn't fun RPOs. It was like go ball RPOs. Oh, that guy's covered. Boom, you get hit. That's a sack. And so it's just like, I don't know. That I don't know how to weigh that. Like, is that the offense? Is that the quarterback? I weighed it more on the offense. But watching him on third downs at Cal is what got me so excited. I'll maintain, I believe they played Pitt. Yeah, they did, because now they're in the same conference. Cal and Pitt are both in the ACC. That blew my mind because I was about to say Pitt, but I was like, wait, no, they are. Yeah. yeah, they're in the same conference now. They played there and going against Narduzzi, who does some stuff on third down. And there's Mendoza ripping some throws on third and long. And like his eyes are going to the right spot. He was changing protections. And that's what got me really excited about him. Again, I like my wild horses at quarterback, but I also like guys that play like Mendoza because it's like, it's coaching tape. I mean, it's teach tape, like his footwork, his ball placement. That's really what won me over too, was consistent ball placement. I accuracy people kind of overuse it. I think sometimes incorrectly. He has real accuracy because it's like when he misses to the right spot. He throws guys away from coverage. So it might look like, oh, that's behind a guy, but then you see the safety closing down or something like that. Can make all the throws, but I agree with you. I think his arm is more pretty good, fine. Like I always try to round down on my grades, but he's in between above average and good for me. So I guess that's technically above average, but you're not going to go on Madden and see a 98 throw power rating, you know, with him or anything like that. The golf comparison I totally get. Even outside the Cal stuff, it's just how he's built, how he throws, everything. I would say my high end comparison for him is Matt Ryan, same archetype, where Matt was kind of that goofy athlete. And Matt is such a good thrower on the move, kind of underrated thrower on the move, and just really accurate with his ball placement. Always had a kind of like a pretty good arm, but not a great arm. And that's why kind of didn't age great. He did age great. I should say that. He played for 15 freaking years, but as opposed to some of the other guys with their arms talent and everything, but that kind of archetype. So I agree with you. It's like, do I think he's going to be the high end dude, like some, you know, the Allens, the Mahomes, the Lamars, Drake Mays, those guys, Herberts and everything? Maybe not, but that second tier quarterback. Yeah. I think that's an easy ceiling, right, that you can win with and that you can build around and everything. And also just calm and professional. And teams like the Jets and Raiders need that so much. And I think that's, yeah, he's goofy and a nerd, but it's like, you need that. That, like, guys do not care if you're a nerd as long as you're tough and you win freaking football games.
Yeah, and you're egoless.
He's tough, you know? And wins freaking football games.
Yeah,
so,
exactly. Yeah. I think that's, and you want quarterbacks that have overcome adversity and, like, you know, you learn more about like his mom and his experience with her and like, okay, he's overcome a lot there. You learn that, he was going to Yale until at the last moment, Cal comes in with an offer.
Him and Jonathan Taylor. The
only FBS offer. It's like, okay, like, yeah, he's really had to scratch and crawl to get this point. And like Miami was after him. Georgia was after him after he went in the portal. He goes to Indiana. Like and it's not like he did it to prove that what he could do. He went because his brother was there, and so he had all the inside information he needed on what the coaching staff was like and how things would go there. And he elevates this team to heights that they've never seen before. So I don't know. I when it came to Mendoza, I've always liked him, but I throughout this year, just okay, I've run out of reasons why to really doubt him as being a true NFL starter who can help you compete for the division year in, year out, help go to the playoffs. Like he's that type of guy. And so, yeah, I think that it'll be really interesting as the draft order plays out. We figure out who finishes one and how that whole thing, because I think the Giants and Raiders play in a couple weeks. Like there's some interesting things that'll play out with this order.
Yeah, those games where they were down, Oregon, Iowa, where they had to win kind of ugly maybe at the end.
Yeah.
Those are the games that are like.
The Penn State, got, the final drive.
Like, Penn State game, yeah.
Yes. And then Ohio State, like that, I mean, I they really want to, they want balance. Indiana, they really, and yes. Mendoza's averaging like 230 passing yards per game this year. Like the box score scouts are not going to be thrilled with that, but it's because of that offense, and they really want the run game. They really want balance. They really want the run game to be a big part of what they do. And we saw that against Ohio State, and just, you know, running into stacked boxes, and Sonny Styles and Caden McDonald just shutting things down.
Yeah.
But when they needed Mendoza to step up and make a play, he did it. I mean, there were four throws. It was the deep post that set up the touchdown. The fade, the slot fade to Surratt. Yep. There was a fourth and two where somebody, I can't remember who it was right now. It was Caden Curry, was right in his lap. Throws it around him to the tight end, get the first down, and then with 2 minutes left, the go ball to Becker with 33 yards. Essentially putting the game away. So when his team needs him to make a play, he's stepped up, and we've seen it, whether it was the Penn State game, when he did that final drive, the Oregon game, the Iowa game, Ohio State. And so I just cannot wait to see what he does, to kind of finish this chapter in the playoffs.
I agree. No, I'm fired up. It's been really cool watching just that whole team and everything. And just a parting thought on it, it was that you just mentioned it, like, oh, he had the inside information. This spring, after I watched him, and I was like, okay, I'm kind of looking around like, all right, this guy that threw like 11 touchdowns last year, all right, I'm going to name him QB1. I don't want to be a hot take guy, but come on. He has an interview. I want to say it was with the Indiana like YouTube page. And he's talking about why he went to Indiana, you know, and anyone that's seen Mendoza interview, you can tell that he treats everything like a book report. And, you know, he's very studious and everything, but he was like, you know, he's intense. And he was just like, well, I knew what Cignetti and this offense and what the stats they did on Curtis Rourke and what he did with James Madison, how he teaches the offense. And he's like super intense about it. But I'm like, oh, you transferred for the right reason. Like, you watch that, you know how good this Indiana offense is. Like, it's good. And so I don't know, that kind of encouraged me. It wasn't like, oh, the program and all this stuff. It was like, no, I want to get better. And this offense rocks. And I know I can like juice up my stats a little bit in this offense. I was like, you get it, man. You see the big picture with all this. So that's just another thing I want to throw in there. I was like, I like this guy. And I like a couple of receivers he throws here too.
But I was going to say, we hit so much on Mendoza, but we do, I mean, it's not just a quarterback and then a bunch of other guys playing. Like they might have, Ohio State's probably going to have the most draft picks, and then probably Texas A&M and Indiana fighting out for who's going to be second in terms of just most draft picks in April. And it's both sides of the ball. I mean, the receiver, Surratt. Yeah. Surratt will be interesting because he's not, I don't like, he won't run poorly. He might be like a 4.47 guy. I don't know.
You look better than AO Manor?
Yeah, right. But
you
know,
do you like him better than that? Like, that's kind of
I do. I mean,
yeah,
well,
I do too. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that he's more natural at the catch point. Sometimes AO Manor would fight the ball and it didn't look as natural, whereas with Surratt, he's a former basketball player, and you kind of tell with the way he plays. But those back shoulders and the fades, and I mean, just he really knows how to attack the football. Cooper, he might have the best contact balance of any of these receivers. Just his ability after the catch is really impressive. The ball skills, and then on defense, I mean, Aiden Fisher at linebacker is awesome. They lost one of their defensive linemen, Stephen Daly, which is a bummer. But D'Angelo Pounds, at corner. Undersized, that's just, it's going to be a deal breaker for some teams, but man, he knows how to play. And so Indiana's got a group of guys that are going to be pretty good pros.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about the Ohio State now, who they played against, who is loaded. You have your number one player, my number two player, but probably end up being my number one player, if I'm being honest, Arvell Reese, who is, do you have him as an edge or an off ball? I guess I'm going to call him an edge, but I kind of have, I just keep saying LB as I could cheat.
Right.
Like, oh, that could be an outside linebacker, as a cheat. He's your number one player. We'll just start with him before we get into the other guys, because he's a maniac and freaking awesome and like one of the coolest players you'll ever watch.
That's it. If you make me put a position on him, it probably would be edge. But he's so, like, he looks, looks like a linebacker, a big linebacker. Mm-hmm. He's 6'4", 240. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, hit the violence that he plays with. Yeah. Like, I got some messages after the Big Ten championship game saying, where was Reese this game? I didn't hear his name once or this. And it's like, he was watching the tape back. He was doing exactly what he was asked to do. And he's setting the edge and he's playing with violence. And he was like, he's not asked to just pin his ears back and go and attack the quarterback.
He's not just
spying.
Flash.
And yeah, yeah. That in the fourth quarter, that when he was able to cut off Mendoza, the closing burst that he showed was just phenomenal. So this guy, for a really a one-year starter, he saw playing time last year, but he's really a one-year starter this year. He's been that hybrid chess piece in Matt Patricia's defense. Yeah. That is just such an important part of what they want to be, because he can drop in space. He can rush the quarterback. I mean, he is an amplified version of Jalen Walker from last year, who, you know, was like my sixth overall player or something like that. So yeah, Reese is awesome. He'll be a top somewhere. He'll be drafted somewhere in the top 10. He's one of the few guys that I think is a dude in this draft. But yeah, Ohio State's loaded because Sonny Styles he's no slouch behind him. I mean, he's
a first round linebacker. I have a first round grade on him. I think he's awesome.
And this is only his second year as a linebacker. He's a safety and he played well last year. Not great. This year, he's improved upon that. He's legit 6'4 and a half, 240 pounds, going to run really well. No, he just turned 21 years old because he reclassified. And so he's a senior, but he just turned 21. So he's a young player. Ohio State, in my mock draft, that
he's
came
so
out
smart.
He really is.
His awareness and recognition is so good on top of being so athletic. Yeah, sorry to cut you off, but like he's really grown on me. I liked him, but now I really like him as the season's gone along.
Yeah, I mean, I took Heat in my August top 50 for having him like 25 or something. Now 24. Now it's like, okay, I was pretty low on him because he's right. Gonna go somewhere top 20, top 15. And you know, in my mock draft, I had 5 Ohio State players going top 20, and that would tie the record for most from one program. And I think it's certainly feasible.
It's very possible.
Yeah, Arvell Reese with Sonny Styles. I mean, Caleb Downs is.
Yeah.
He's
the back 7 version of Reese, who's the front 7 version. They're queens on the chessboard. It's insane.
With Downs, you know exactly what you're getting in terms of the way he operates, the way he sees the field. He's a very good athlete, an outstanding tackler. You know, I'm tired of hearing the Ed Reese comparisons. Like, it's not the style of player that he is. It's not how they play him.
It's more like supercharged Buda Baker. That's kind of
That's not bad.
I
like that. But I mean, you know, we don't see safeties drafted very high. But I don't think you're gonna have to talk yourself into him very, very hard. And so he'll go high. I had Carnell Tate in there as well, and then Cade McDonald at nose tackle, who's just been, to me, he's been a revelation. Where I didn't necessarily see that coming. I had a little bit of Arvell Reese hope coming in, like. Just the flashes we saw last year. So, like, and he just missed my top 50. So, I wasn't shocked about what he's been doing. Caden McDonald really came out of nowhere in his improvements this year. He can reset the line of scrimmage. I mean, he just plays peekaboo with single blocks. And he's going to shut down the run. For a guy that's 330 pounds, to see him move is really impressive.
Yeah. No, I really like McDonald. All these guys were in my top 30 as well. Like, I think he's just a monster. Downs, obviously. Caden Curry, though, you mentioned him. He had a great Big Ten championship game. He's fun.
Short-armed, you know what?
It works.
Sawed off, and he's going to play, man, because the motor doesn't quit. He's smart. He's physical. Kind of reminds me of another former Ohio State, John Simon, back in the day.
Yeah.
I think the Ravens drafted him like 4th round. So, and I think Curry will go somewhere in that same range.
I was going to say, Curry feels like a Ravens player all the way.
Yeah, so absolutely.
It was like when I kept mocking John Sawyer to the Ravens for like 2.5 years.
Curry's the next version of that. Which is kind of similar. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Same thing. Yeah. Right. Same exact thing. No, Reese is so cool. Like, yeah, Ohio State's defense is just so much fun. Carnell Tate, we both really like. I'm trying to still figure out my ranking for the receivers. So give me a couple months to figure out. But I have him as a top 15 player. Like, I know you're high on him too. Like, his sideline catching so cool. Makes Chris Carter proud.
It's a skill that doesn't get enough credit. I mean, it's
right.
He's so detailed with the way he attacks the football and his routes. Yeah. Like, he's not the most explosive athlete you've ever seen, but he's so detailed that allows him to outpace and create some separate. Like, I don't know. know. I'm just so impressed.
While having some trait, like some length and stuff. Yes. So it's like, yeah, he like, he knows how to maximize it, but having some, like, yeah, not the most explosive, but it has some traits and just different forms of athleticism. Maybe that's the best way to put it than just like pure speed. No, he's a good football player, man. And then Reese, I don't know if I told you this, but my comparison for him was Jalen Smith when he was healthy at Notre Dame. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Before he shredded his knee, because that's the best linebacker film I've ever seen. As far as a prospect, but yeah, that's the guy that keeps coming back to my mind. But anyways, front like seven it. Force, yeah, he's awesome. All right, last couple teams here. I know you got to get going soon, but Georgia, I have just CJ Allen, another linebacker that might sneak into the first round. Like we're dead serious. There might be four linebackers that might go in first round. Yeah. Because Cincinnati's guy, he's another good one as well.
Yeah.
And then even Texas Tech, this is not a first rounder, but Texas Tech's got Jacob Rodriguez, who's an interesting, fun player. Yep. But Georgia's got CJ Allen and then Zachariah Branch, the receiver transfer from USC. Anybody else on this team, or if you just want to highlight those couple guys?
I mean, Kristen Miller, the defensive tackle, is a really good run defender. You know, like nothing too sexy about him, but he's a good player. Dalen Everett, a corner, has a chance to be like a third round pick. On offense, I really like the tight ends. Lawson Lucky, if he comes out. Yeah, he's a good player, man. Delp is a day three pick.
Yep.
Monroe Freeling, left tackle, I think is really underrated. I threw him in my mock draft just to kind of give him a little bit of attention because scouts really like him and his upside. We'll see if he comes back or he goes back to school. Funny. But yeah, he's a good player. And then you mentioned Texas Tech. David Bailey, man, he's like nothing against Jacob Rodriguez. I know he won all the awards. He was, what, fifth in the Heisman. If you ask, you give the defensive coordinator of Texas Tech some truth serum and say, like, okay, you can only have one of these guys, I bet you he's taking David Bailey. I mean, nothing against Jacob Rodriguez. It's just the juice that Bailey brings off the edge to consistently threaten the quarterback, led the entire FBS in pressures this year. You want that on your team. You want a guy like that who is so explosive, so long, and you feel like he's just getting better and better. That was one of those portal pickups that was a really good investment.
Well, that's the other thing too. Speaking of investment, it's like Texas Tech, everyone's like, oh, they paid their players. It's like, yeah, they also scouted. They didn't throw their money around at a bunch of losers, and the guys that are transferring for a reason. No, they brought in guys that are dudes. Like, that's the difference, I think. It's like anyone can say and throw around money, ha, 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 but it's like, you got to scout these guys.
They were irresponsible with it. Like, they were economically sound. Trenches. Yes.
Yes.
100%.
Yes. No, they knew. And Bailey, I'm right there with you. He was a top 15 player for me on my updated board. I think he was 30 or 29 going into the season.
Yep.
And it was same more like, is he a DPR? Is he a little bit more than that? You know, just as a designated guy. But it was like, no, he's fine against the run. But that's the thing. He only has to be fine because of just what he does against the passer. And that's why I'm excited about him. And again, as we've kind of broken down this class, it's like, that's what you want these elite traits, because there's a lot of non like true blue chip guys. So yes, they have blemishes, but like Bailey can get after the quarterback. He can rush with power too, which I think because he's just a little freaking ball of dynamite coming after the quarterback. Do you have his length? Curious, pick your brain before we wrap up.
I don't, because
I've been curious about it.
No, I know, but
it's not a concern of mine. But I was just
he plays long. Like I'll be surprised if it's not over 33 at least. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But
and then his teammate too up front, Romello.
Romello Height. Really, the entire defensive line. I mean, Lee Hunter, and I mean it is a good defensive line. And Jacob Rodriguez. I don't want to sound like I was slighting him, because he went from an undrafted guy to borderline top 100. That's a throwback. He has turned himself into a legitimate like top four round guy with how he's played this year. So, you know, all the credit to him. And they got a few guys in the secondary too. So yeah, this Texas Tech, that Oregon Texas Tech matchup is going to be a lot of fun to scout these guys and get a better sense for, you know, how or what their draft grade will ultimately be.
Dane, well, if I had to give a grade on you, you're a blue chipper to me. You're a purple chip. The
feeling's mutual. Yes. We were laughing before we hit record. Like, we're going to look up and it's going to be like an hour and a half into it. And here we go.
I can't believe it. We got through the first game and we're already like a half hour in. I was like, okay.
just like old times.
It'll be good. It'll be an hour.
nothing changes.
Whoops. Nothing changes. No, Dane, this was so great. Thank you so much for joining me. This was always a blast. Great seeing you. I'm glad the Mariners didn't have to play Cleveland, so we didn't have to hate each other for a week or so. So that worked out okay. Yeah.
It worked out, but it didn't work out at the same time for either of us.
It didn't work out. Yeah, I know. Right. Yeah. No, but always great. Catch Dane's stuff all at The Athletic. You know, he's going to have plenty coming out. Probably on this, I know you like to do a little preview series for, like, you know, playoffs and college and all that, but you're going to have big boards. You're going to have stuff on the Senior Bowl, Shrine Game. What else you got coming up next couple of weeks that they can check out on The Athletic?
Yeah, let's get through these playoffs first. Yeah, previews coming on those coming out this week. And yeah, and then once we have the underclassmen come out, then that's when I'll update the top 50 and the mock draft and all that. So yeah, busy time.
That's awesome. No, Dane, thank you so much for joining me. I'll Anytime. Be back on Thursday previewing week 16. Oh my goodness, with Charles. So make sure to come for that and check us out there as we preview another good game of NFL games, but also check out the college football playoff. Hopefully this was a fun little preview for you. Another little snapshot of this draft class. Make sure you check out Dane's updated big board and all his other good stuff. But thank you all for joining us here at Football 301. I'll see you guys next time.